Hello, this is Jim Brown welcoming you to another CaperCast. This one is sort of an adjunct to the last one where I told you of the recent death of my great friend Joe Hudson. I was telling you some stories about him, particularly about launching his boat down the mountainside in Big Sur, and I forgot the punchline. After getting his boat towed by a cement mixer mounted on a low buoy down a precarious road and around a huge rock that projected out from the mountainside. And you'll remember, we made it. We got the boat around the rock, barely. It was scraping the rub rails on one side, and the tires of the cement mixer and the low buoy were causing the shoulder to crumble on the cliffside. We got it down there, launched the boat out through the surf with the help of a bulldozer and some good luck in a rising tide. And Joe and his friend Michael sailed it up to Monterey and got their lives put together and started off on a trip. But the very next morning after the launching, I had forgotten and left my camera bag on the beach. I went down there and discovered that the rock, which was really the size of the cement mixer, had come out of the mountain, fallen into the canyon, and taken the road with it. The very next day, I went back to that beach just a year ago and found that we could get only so far with Joe's quad, a four-wheel ATV. We had to stop and walk the rest of the way because the road was gone and we could still see the rock in the canyon. Well, anyway, that was me telling stories about Joe. How about Joe telling some of his own stories, eh? It was never easy to get him to tell stories. He felt that that was my responsibility. But back in 2004, we were listening to some new stuff from Mark Hassel. Incidentally, we've got a lot more Mark Hassel coming on these CaperCasts. I just discovered an 8-inch reel of quarter-inch audio tape, which Scott Brown is digitizing for me. We'll be able to dive into that for a long time. But Joe, listening to Mark's stories, did not want to be outdone, and so I got him to sit down and talk to my video camera. And I asked him to tell me about that voyage, California to Australia, in that boat, a 30-foot Piver Nimble, starting out with his great girlfriend Jenny New and Jenny's brother Michael, who were from Trinidad, and the idea was to sail back to Trinidad. Well, they were late in the season. I'll let Joe explain. So here they are approaching Point Conception, which is just north of Santa Barbara. It's called the Cape Horn of the Pacific, and here we'll find out why.
Approached Point Conception, it was blowing nicely, and we were averaging 10 knots, which is the most we'd ever averaged, and we were having a thrill. I remember Jenny saying to me, do you think maybe we should reef a little bit and slow down? I said, oh, no, this is great. First time we really got the boat moving. And as we approached Conception, we saw this big black cloud funneling down off the California mountains towards the ocean and didn't know what it was. We figured there must be some wind in it, but we didn't realize it was a big Santa Ana blowing. And it was probably blowing 55 knots. And we went into that with full jet oil and no brains and got hit really hard. And I remember seeing, the first thing I noticed was the boom. The big boom was actually bending. The tiller was actually bending. And the whole front of the boat was covered with white water. And my friend was up there trying to reef with the inadequate reefing gear, which bent in his hands. And we were like stuck with the main all the way out and bent around the shrouds, and the full general, we went off at I don't know what speed. The speedometer only went to 25 or something, and it was pegged, and our hearts were in our throats, and we went on an endless surf after a surf after a surf, climbing over the waves, and the point was right there, not more than 200-300 yards away. The boat was trying to move in that direction, and we were trying to hold it off, and we managed to. That was our first big thrill. I don't know how fast we went, but it was observed by people in the lighthouse. Actually, one guy went and built a trimaran after he'd seen that. So we heard later. And we put in behind, I think it was Arguello, behind that little light station there. That's where we found out the wind was going 55 knots. And drank a lot of wine that night. We were on our way to Santa Barbara, and that was our first stop. Yeah. And we made it on down the coast. So we got down as far as Ensenada and realized that it was way too late. The season, hurricane season started, and we were just too far behind. So we came back to San Diego with the intention of crossing over to Hawaii instead. So we unloaded about 300 pounds off the boat. It was way overloaded, as they usually were in those days, and took off with a friend that was going to do the navigation. We had a pretty good trip, although at times there was some high-speed surfing that became a little unnerving, especially at night. We had a wheel inside. We ended up buttoning ourselves inside and surfing that boat at night in the black without being able to see in any direction, and to the point where we just thought, you know, this is very, very full of stress, and slowed down a little bit. We made a reasonable crossing. It was 17 days. Most of it was a lot of fun. And when we pulled into Lahaina, in those days, it wasn't that common, and they treated us like heroes. We were embarrassed. But, you know, the reporters came out, all that stuff, we were very thrilled, though. We were absolutely thrilled to be there.
It was usual in those days for people to go cruising without any money, so Joe had to stop and work in Hawaii. His crew returned to California, and he continued later with a different crew. And I asked him to tell me about the most memorable incidents, and of course, the most memorable ones are the hairy ones. So here's another one from the New Hebrides, now called Vanuatu, but back then it was really a pretty primitive place. This is all happening in the mid-1960s, if I haven't made that clear.
Which is a group of islands between Fiji and Australia, above New Caledonia. We were anchored there in a bight, and the wind picked up, and we decided we better get out and move the boat. And it was getting dark. And it was a precarious anchorage, so we decided we'd better get out of there. But we had no engine, and it was a question of getting the anchor up and falling off on the starboard tack. In this case, we wanted to fall off on the port tack, because off on the starboard there were these huge pilings coming out of the ground, out of the water, which were the remnants of an old pier in the Second World War. And there were two or three of these steel railroad tracks coming out of the water. And we didn't know where the rest were or anything about it, so we wanted to avoid going in that direction. And we weren't terribly experienced, and then getting the anchor up and falling off, we went off on the starboard tack instead of the port tack, and we were headed right towards this scene. And the fear was the unknown. Are we going to go over one of these things and have it punch a hole in our plywood body and just skewer us right there and hold us helpless? And we didn't know where they were. We had to sail between a couple of them, and we did, and we didn't get hit. But I can remember thinking, what a way to lose a boat. Get it stuck by a lance like that. Held firm. That was a big scare.
Incidentally, this was in a day when there were a lot more 30-footers sailing around the world than there were 40-footers or even 50-footers. You got to have 50 feet nowadays. And also, very few sailors do it engineless anymore. As I mentioned, this recording was made in 2004. And Joe was just spilling out these incidents as they came to mind, out of order, incidentally. The New Hebrides came later. After they left Hawaii, they had a new crew and not real navigation skills. They started down through the Pacific and managed to miss three atoll islands, Fanning, Palmyra, and Christmas. Missed them all. No GPS, of course. They finally managed to find Canton Island, and the story resumes there with another swashbuckler.
We were trying to get into Canton Island, which is an atoll about 900 miles south of Hawaii. A great big atoll, I think it's a 9-mile lagoon or something, very low. And we pulled up there late afternoon, and it has a one entrance only to a 9-mile lagoon where the current, I believe, gets up to 16 knots. I think it says in the pilot, or can get up if the trades are blowing. And the trades were blowing. And we arrived in the afternoon in a small speedboat from the island. A couple of Yankees were out fishing, and they came by and were glad to see us. They don't see many boats there. And they said, don't try the entrance. We'll go in and get the tug and pull you in. We said, great. And so we hoped to out there, and they sped off in the speedboat. And about 45 minutes, an hour later, out came this huge 40-foot diesel-powered boat with half the guys that work on the island in it, you know, all civilians working for satellite systems that track the satellites in the early days. They had tracked John Glenn on the first orbit. But these guys all, you know, needed something to do when they're not working, and they all came out to be helpful and give us a tow in. Well, we just put our trust into them and let go of everything. We felt that we had arrived and we could relax, and they were in charge, and everything knew what they were doing, and so on and so forth. So they threw us a long line. I think it was hemp. It was very big, about an inch and a half, and which we had trouble cleaning, but we got that thing on there, and they started in. And just about by now, it had started to get dark, and they flipped on their big lights, the lights went ahead of us and ahead of them, and we were being towed in, and we saw these white strips of something. We realized, my God, they're waves, and they're breaking waves, and they're breaking away from us because the current was running out, and so we couldn't really see the size of the waves. We could only see the backs of them, and my thought was, my God, these guys aren't taking us through that, are they? And sure enough, we were into this. It's cauldron of water, and these waves, I would say they're easily 5 feet, maybe more, because they were breaking on the deck, and the boat was pulling us. It seemed to have plenty of power, but a problem came up, which was that these trimarans surf on any wave that size. They will surf and they will catch up with the boat that's pulling them, and because they're planing. And so there was nothing I could do but fall off to the right or the left to avoid actually driving right over this 40-footer and coming down on the crew. And they weren't aware of our problem. So finally, they got a distance ahead of us, and we were turned sideways, and blam, the line took it and snapped. And it was probably rotten, and it was probably just as well, or it might have torn off the bow, if nothing else. And they suddenly, because of the current, were a great distance from us, and we were being swept out to sea and totally out of control with no sails, no motor, nothing, because we had relied on, you know, the safety of their situation. And we thought, well, what now? You know, are we going to go on the reef or what? Is this it? And we saw them with their lights on. Oh, by the way, the island had turned out for this show and had parked their cars on either side, on one side of the channel, and had lit up the entire entrance to this island. And there was a 600-foot ship there, I think, called the Roosevelt, that had been run aground Second World War. All very eerie. The whole scene was extremely eerie. And we're being washed out to sea, and we see the big 40-footer turn and come charging after us like a bull, just zooming, breaking through the waves, coming after us. We thought, you know, yay, maybe there's something that's going to happen here after all. And they went down current of us and stopped, and we slammed together, and we thought, uh-oh, maybe this is going to be a shipwreck. They threw a line to us, we threw a line to them. Fortunately, we collided at the strongest part of our boat, and so nothing happened. We right at the end of the cross arms. They threw a line, and it went over us, and we threw a line, and it hit their their bridge and fell in the water. One of their guys jumped in the water. This is all in 5 and 6 foot waves. We're all being washed out to sea. And by the time we got the line secured, we were already past the danger point. And we were absolutely, our eyes are as big as saucers, and we did. They started towing us out into calm water, and they said, okay, we're going to try it again, but not for an hour and a half, which we thought, yes, okay, thank you for that. And everybody got very quiet, and they turned the lights off, and we putted around for some length of time. And then the lights went back on, and it was, here we go again. And we just, our hearts went right back into our throats, and we approached this place again under lights, and the waves were much, much smaller down. Now, I would say that we're probably dealing with 4 or 5 knots of current, and the waves are probably a foot or two. And even so, it was, you could feel the tug pulling to pull us in there. And they said, okay, now, we still got some current. We're going to take you to our pier, but there's some current there. We can't linger there. We're going to have to cast you off and move out of there. So be ready to throw a line ashore. And so we approached this little pier, being pulled by the tug, and we felt them release us. And John Gunnels, who was a crew member, hurled our line ashore to about 60 waiting hands of all the people that come off the island to see this thing happen. And they pulled us in, and we were safe. And that was our Canton Island adventure.
Well, Joe was really getting into it now. We stopped and had a gab and traded a few yarns and resumed with another swashbuckler.
We had another experience, a little island called Futuna, which is a French Polynesian island off by itself. I believe it's kind of due west of Samoa. It went on in the direction of the Tonga Islands and became a major hurricane there. And did a hell of a lot of damage. It was pretty big where it was happening. And what happened was this. We were anchored in a bight on the island that's normally fairly well protected. It has a steep beach of pebbles. And there were 2 or 3 Ponga-like boats, skiffs and stuff anchored there also that belonged to the natives. And as the wind started increasing one afternoon and a few trees started coming down, we noticed that the boats that were anchored there and moored there were being pulled in, and we were the only one. I considered beaching the boat, and the natives were available to help us try to lift the boat up the beach, but I was afraid that it'd be one of those situations where you get stuck, and there's too much weight, and it's miscalculation, and you just grind the bottom of the boat out. And so I decided the best thing to do would be to throw out every anchor we could and go ashore and just hope. And so dusk was coming, and I had about a 37-pound damper to windward in sand, and I had a line going to a great big anchor of theirs that was in the reef, and I had another cable going aft to into the coral, and so there were 3 lines out. We finally went ashore as it got dark, and our plan had been to leave in the next few days and take one of the old members of the island to Fiji and as our guest. And so they were very happy with us that we were doing this for them and decided to throw us a party on that night. And so we were all ushered down to a fala where, you know, half that village turned out. And I got to sit next to the chief with a bottle of scotch between us, and it all looked like it was going to be a very great, happy native time. But the problem was this hurricane was not having any part of it. And every so often, even though the meal was spread out, but before we could get well into it, water was coming up into the fala, and everybody was leaping up and grabbing the food. And the young bucks were running up and leaning against the fala to keep it from blowing over. And the trees were coming down right and left. They actually lost, I think I heard, 70% of their crop in this storm, which was just starting. I don't know how strong the winds were, but I guess they're over 70. Because to bring all those trees down, they probably were. I was getting sick without even having any scotch, just from the fear of losing the boat. I was pretty sure that the boat wasn't going to be able to hang on, because just before dusk, I could see that the current was rushing through that bight at about 4 or 5 knots, and the boat was being strained as it was, and I just didn't figure there was a chance of help. The waves were coming over the reef now, and swirling through this bight with tremendous force, and the water is totally different color. And beyond the reef, where the real wind was, they were pushing these waves by the island that were the size of freight cars. It was just awesome. So when the party could not happen because of the storm, we just decided to go back, and we were planning to stay on shore in this old half native, half New Zealander's house. Anyway, and so we had to climb over trees virtually all the way back to his house while the storm raged on. And I had given up on the boat. I was already trying to imagine finding some wires and stuff from it that I could start a new one. And because I was very, very depressed about the whole thing. I was sure it wouldn't be there in the morning. And I didn't sleep all night. In the morning, when at first light, I went out to the edge there and I looked out, and the boat was still there, and I couldn't believe it. And as it became more and more light, and it had calmed down considerably, as it became more and more light, I noticed the boat was almost pure white. It was covered with salt, and it had aged, but I was so happy that it was still there. And eventually, when we could get out to the boat, we found one of the anchor lines had been stretched so hard that it had gone into those little knots that it does. The one to seaward had done most of the work, and the one aft had been chopped up by the, even though it was cable, been chopped up by the coral. And everything else was fine, except the boat had aged a little. And I felt like I'd been given a boat at that moment. Somebody had said, "Here, have this boat." And it was just as if I had launched it for the first time. Several days later, when the lumpy sea had flattened out a little bit, we catched our way out of that harbor and took old man Jessup, who was 72, a real Zachary Bone character, with us. He hadn't been off the island in 40 years. He didn't have a passport. He needed to go to Fiji to look for his sons, who hadn't come back for too long, and there had been a shipwreck or something. We took old man Jessup with us to Fiji, and which was a trip in itself, because he was such an unusual, wonderful old guy. Shy, didn't pee for days because he was embarrassed. He didn't know what to do. There was a girl on board. We finally worked that out. When we got to Fiji, we had a fairly decent trip to Fiji. They wouldn't let old man Jessup off our boat because he didn't have proper papers. And so he had to sit on the boat for 3 days until the ship left back to his island, where they put him on by skiff and took old man Jessup back. But I'll never forget that guy. And I don't think he ever forgot us. And from there, we went to the New Hebrides, where we stayed and became the most important place that I've ever been outside of Big Sur. I loved it. We stayed there for some time and worked, and then eventually sailed Jenny and I, and she and I took the boat on to Australia.
Well, there's a lot more to be said about Joe Hudson, although I think that's the only recording I have of him telling his own stories in his own voice. I'll give you a sneak preview. He sold his boat in Australia, returned to California, built another one, a 45-footer, which we designed together. We called it the Rather Funky. And in that vessel, he doubled the Pacific with a boatload of wives and chillens at times. From there, he went on to have 2 Sea Runner 37s and 4 Wind Riders, 2 16s and 2 17s. His last boat is a beautiful John Marples-designed Cyclone, a 23-footer constant camber construction, which incidentally may become available now. With time, I hope to tell you more about the man, one of the strongest characters in my life, that's for sure. Next week, I think we'll finish our conversation with Lee Bullock, because both of these guys represent that verve, that drive, that pluck, that commitment, that enthusiasm that really brought the early modern multi-hull into being. Until then, fair winds.